Good morning. On today's programme, we hear from Canada, where the French-speaking province of Quebec has passed a new law to protect the French language. While in Denmark, last week's mass shooting in the country has sparked a debate about the treatment of mental illness. But first, Australians are being urged to get third or fourth COVID-19 vaccine shots in a bid to bring down alarming rates of infection and death. Around 30,000 new infections are reported each day in a country where most COVID controls have been removed. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
COVID-19 was first detected in Australia in January 2020. Patient zero was a man who'd flown into Melbourne from Guangdong in China. The disease would go on to strip millions of people of basic freedoms amid some of the world's toughest disease control measures. Within 2 months of that first infection, Australia became a fortress, slamming shut its international borders to most foreign nationals. Its citizens would need permission from the government in Canberra to leave the country. Australia was closed off to the world. Many Australians would later be forced into isolation by the unprecedented measures. Strict stay-at-home orders were imposed. Melbourne became one of the world's most locked-down cities. In June 2021, parts of Sydney were again sent into lockdown. It started as a two-week shutdown in eastern areas of the city, but would spread to the entire state of New South Wales, lasting for more than 100 days. In the middle of 2022, most COVID restrictions in Australia have ended. Masks are no longer required at most airports. Compulsory isolation for close contacts of positive cases is no longer required, and some vaccine mandates for key workers have also been scrapped. While officials are confident the country of 25.5 million people is through the worst of the pandemic, Australians are urged not to be complacent. In the face of stubbornly high case numbers, they're being advised to get a third or fourth dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. The government is also focusing on improving vaccination rates in First Nation communities, where only 53% of the population have had two vaccine doses, and among children aged between 5 to 11. At 40%, their rates of inoculation are about half of those of 12 to 15-year-olds. More than 95% of those 16 and over are fully vaccinated. But government data shows more than 300 Australians are dying each week. Epidemiologists say the health system could struggle to cope with a severe winter flu season combined with high coronavirus rates. More than 38,000 new infections were reported across the country on Friday. The Federal Health Minister Mark Butler has said Australia was still in a very serious phase of the pandemic. He warned that a range of new subvariants that were sweeping through the Northern Hemisphere had already taken hold in Australia. He's predicting a third Omicron wave in the months ahead. Previous exposure to the virus might not be an insurance policy against reinfections. Experts have warned that catching COVID for a second or even a third time could have significant consequences, including long-term symptoms. They've said that acting like the virus no longer exists was a big reason why people are getting sick more than once. Since the pandemic began, more than 8 million Australians, or about a third of the population, have been infected. A grim milestone is about to be reached. Soon, 10,000 Australians will have died since the virus was first detected here 2.5 years ago. For World Reports, this is Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Next to Canada, where the French-speaking province of Quebec has passed a new law aimed at protecting the French language. It contains sweeping and controversial changes that could affect everything from education and health to the rights of immigrants to be served in other languages. But there are also questions about how the far-reaching law will be put into practice. And as Dan Karpinchuk reports, the new law already faces a growing number of legal challenges.
The new law, Bill 96, is called an Act Respecting French, the official and common language of Quebec. It's a reform of several items of Quebec legislation, including the Charter of the French Language. Its goal, to protect the French language in Quebec. The minister responsible for the French language, Simon Jolin-Barrette, says since Quebec is a French province, it should use its official language with the public. He says if the level of French is to be improved, politicians need to act first at the state level. It's Quebec that has to act if it wants citizens to use more French. To those who fear it, Quebec Premier François Legault says the province is making a historic promise that English speakers will keep their services, adding that he believes they're already better served in their own language in Quebec than any other linguistic minority. The new law contains sweeping changes that will leave its mark on the justice system, the college education system, and many other sectors of Quebec society. For example, it would become mandatory for new immigrants to Quebec to communicate with any government department or agency entirely in French, no later than 6 months after their arrival. It would also alter the system for deciding how many judges in Quebec must be bilingual, and it would put a ceiling on enrollment levels at English language colleges, making it more difficult for students to get into those colleges as their enrollment growth would be capped at 2019 levels. In addition, those students would face new requirements, such as passing a French language exam in order to graduate and take some of their main classes in French. Unilingual English students would also need to take more classes to learn French. That would drastically change staffing at the colleges, forcing the hiring of more French language teachers and putting the jobs of English-speaking teachers at risk. Some lawyers also warn of the effect on the healthcare system. Would the law leave open the door to a significant change in how easy it would be to obtain healthcare in English, even though the Quebec government insists nothing will change on that front? Legal critics say those verbal assurances come cheap, also suggesting that the new law, as written, is expansive, complicated, and with much uncertainty. Shortly after the bill was passed in the National Assembly, there was a protest in Montreal. The president of the Anglophone advocacy group called the Quebec Community Groups Network says the law could prevent hundreds of thousands of English speakers from accessing health care in their own language. Marlene Jennings says she's skeptical of government assurances that the law won't affect English speakers' right of access to health care. She says there are already problems with timely access to health care, and the new law will only exacerbate those problems. Many English-speaking teachers fear they will lose their jobs because of the effect on the education system, and they expect fewer courses in English literature. Some business leaders also expect to bear the effects of the law with additional paperwork and red tape. And the bill would proactively invoke the notwithstanding clause of the Canadian Constitution to protect it from charter challenges. Nevertheless, those challenges are now piling up. Lawyers for the Community Groups Network call it a sad day for all of Quebec. They plan to challenge the bill and the way it was passed, particularly the shielding from most legal appeals. They call that disturbing. Lawyer Sylvia Martin-Laforge says the preventative use of the notwithstanding clause is incredibly troubling. We can't appeal to either the Charter of Rights of Quebec or the Canadian Charter. And constitutional lawyer Julius Gray says they plan to take their case all the way to the United Nations if necessary. And Laforge says there are more effective and inclusive ways to protect the French language without vacating the human, equality, and legal rights of Quebecers. She says there is also a fear of separating historic English speakers from other kinds of English speakers. A prominent Jewish organization, B'nai B'rith, says the law could cause a new exodus of young people from the province. B'nai B'rith officials joined representatives of cultural organizations and municipal politicians to denounce the legislation. The group also fears the law could impact the centuries-old Jewish community. For many of them, English is their first or second language. The head of B'nai B'rith says the law is effectively holding a gun to Quebecers' heads by forcing them to utilize French in settings where accommodations were previously available for non-French speakers, and he adds that it violates minorities' rights to fully participate in society. The English School Board in Montreal has also launched a legal challenge claiming the language law violates the Canadian Constitution by infringing on the right to equal access to law in Canada's both official languages. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also says his government has concerns with the Quebec law. His Justice Minister, David Lametti, criticized the new law, saying he would not rule out Ottawa taking part in a legal challenge against it, adding that all options are on the table when it is necessary to protect the constitutional rights of Canadians. For World Report, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Finally, we go to Denmark, which was last week shaken by the worst mass shooting in the country in recent years. Three innocent people lost their lives in the incident, which has sparked a debate around the treatment of mental illness. Tom Carstensen reports from Copenhagen.
Just after 5:30 last Sunday afternoon, the sound of shots were heard in Denmark's biggest shopping centre, Fields, just south of central Copenhagen. The shopping centre is always busy at this time, as it has 140 shops, lots of restaurants and a cinema complex. And just next to it, 14,000 primarily young women simultaneously were making their way in to listen to megastar Harry Styles in the large venue, Royal Arena. A 22-year-old man is charged with the attack that cost the lives of three people. Many eyewitnesses and videos show how he shot randomly into fleeing crowds, including down escalators at people with prams. Police were on the scene very quickly, and less than 20 minutes later, the man was arrested outside the shopping centre. He surrendered without a fight. But the aftermath and the result of the shooting is devastating. Three innocent people were left dead. One was a 17-year-old woman and one a 17-year-old man. One of them worked in the cinema complex run by Nordisk Film. The company owns theatres all over Denmark and kept them closed for 2 days after the shooting to help employees deal with the shock. The last victim was a 47-year-old Russian man who lived and worked in Denmark. Four people were critically wounded, but all survived. On top of that, more than 20 had minor injuries. The man arrested for the shooting was jailed for 24 days on Monday. But he wasn't put in a normal jail, he was put in a mental institution. This is because he's deemed to suffer from severe mental illness. Videos he put up on the internet prior to the attack points to this as well, as he talks directly about treatments not working. This has, of course, sparked a debate in Denmark on the issue of mental illness and the treatment hereof. Budgets and numbers of beds in Denmark's public health services have for years been cut within the departments of mental illness, so critics see this as a possible result hereof. Media have for years been running stories on how treatments of mental illness, such as schizophrenia, is problematic, that people are often turned away and medicated at home instead of being put in hospitals, because there simply isn't any room. When Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen, when making a statement in front of the shopping centre, was asked about this problem, she brushed it off and said this was not a time to talk politics. The Prime Minister is already under pressure, as she's just been given a reprimand by the Parliament because of her handling of the culling of all Denmark's mink during COVID. Opposition wanted her sacked, but she was saved by supporting parties on the left in the Danish parliament. Thankfully, Denmark is not used to these kinds of attacks. Last time was in 2015 when an Islamic terrorist murdered two people before being shot by police. Because of this, many in Denmark instantly thought the shooting was another terrorist attack. But police were quite quick to dismiss that this time, and therefore focus went on to the issue of mental illness. Now Denmark has to heal. As part of this, on Tuesday, a memorial was held in front of the shopping centre. Among the participants was the Prime Minister, the Lord Mayor of Copenhagen, and the Crown Prince of Denmark. But this will take time. The country is in a state of shock. We went from happy days, with three Tour de France legs being held in Denmark, to the worst mass shooting in years. And we're simply not used to these kind of things in Denmark. It's something we hear about from America, and we've probably told ourselves that that can't happen in our small country. But it could. And it did. And it's scaring people. For World Report in Copenhagen, this is Tom Carstensen.
Well, that's our lot for today. If you want to listen back to the programme, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport. We're back at the same time next week. Until then, from me, Angus Cox, and all the team, take care.